ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Shocking evidence, jury drama, and witness cross-examinations. The Case of podcast takes you inside the biggest trials in the country, reporting the in-depth detail of how courts work and who's in there each week. We've brought you Erin Patterson's mushroom murder trial, the case of Toya's murder in Cairns, a Canberra cold case, the two intruders, and many more. Search for The Case Of, it's on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Prime Minister says the fuel excise cut will make a difference, but the Treasurer is warning the cut could take weeks to flow through. He calls it managing expectations. And while Opposition Leader Angus Taylor has welcomed the move, he says the government has finally acted under pressure and the Coalition will continue to lead. It comes as preliminary modelling from the Prime Minister's department suggests rationing would come into effect if the national diesel stockpile dropped to 10 days' supply, something the Prime Minister has dismissed as speculation. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Raf Epstein from ABC Radio Melbourne.
And Raf, it's good to have you back because there's just a few things to talk about, just a couple of issues. You actually had the Prime Minister on this morning, the day after he made some pretty significant announcements we discussed in yesterday's pod with Jacob, you know, the cut to the fuel excise, the road user charge being taken to zero. So really dramatic action. And he, you know, was talking about whether this would actually lead to tangible change for Australians. He said, yes, it would. And he is right. Literally, it would. But that it won't fix it. And I think that's a smart message from him, Raf. Like, I did think him saying, well, we're contributing, but we can't fix it, is actually levelling with people.
He is levelling with people to some degree. What I found really interesting, I started the show this morning saying, look, the Treasurer says you're getting an extra $19, average tank of gas, you're getting an extra $19 from tomorrow. What are you going to do with the extra $19? I don't think anybody believes they're getting an extra $19. So yes, it helps. The PM was actually waiting on the line when we had the truck driver who's filling up with diesel. His name's Anwar. He's still paying tons more than before the war started. Someone texted, and this is what the PM has to deal with, right? Someone texted me saying, listen, fair crack, $19 less tomorrow. It'll still be $40 more than it was a month ago. Mm. So he knows, I think he knows that they won't get any thanks. No one's going to go, oh, wow, I've got more money to spend. I think what they hope for is that they get more respect and that they look like the adults in the room, but they are on a bit of a hiding to nothing. They sort of had to, well, I don't know if they had to, but the opposition is saying cut the tax on fuel, the excise. They're bullying the states into trying to give back some of the GST money. They give it back, but it only kind of gets you to the start line with voters. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, just start line is a good way of framing it. You can only get to the start line, whatever incumbent government there would have been, whether it's Liberal or Labor, yeah, or, you know, whatever flavours our parliament might throw up to us in the future. This would be, if I can say it, a shit show. Like, yeah, this is not difficult for, yes, this is difficult for anyone to manage. So what they've done here is, of course, Raf, you know, people are going to think, well, no, I'm not going to get that money back in my pocket. I've already lost the money. Well, yeah, but if they hadn't intervened to do this,
yes,
you would be paying that extra.
Yes.
So it would be on top, you know. So it's about lessening what is already a very big burden. The big questions for me are, yes, this is good retail politics. It's a sugar hit. It gives people a signal that if they can, they're trying to do something. You want to see that your government's doing something. But if it leads to inflationary pressure, like the economists say, and that's our broader problem, like, it's one of those things that, yes, is good politics, and good politics is what governments often go for, but I don't know if it's good economics.
He directly answered that question. So I want to read you what the PM said, right? Basically, your view is simplistic, Patricia. That's the TLDR. But here we go. No, this is the PM. The idea with some of this simplistic analysis, his words, that somehow this is putting more money into the economy, that's not true. Your last caller said, this is what the PM said to me, he's still spending more money than he was before. How is there more money in the economy? By reducing the cost. So he's willing to tackle that. I don't think he cares about people reading the sorts of columns that I really like to read. And I might listen to our colleagues on the ABC Business Daily and hear about its inflationary. They have to be seen to be doing something. I think one of the ways I've started to think about this year, sure, there's some political cover because Angus Taylor and the Libs will claim credit for this, the Coalition will claim credit. They suggested the fuel excise cut and the road user charge should be scraped off sooner. So they'll claim the credit. It's a mistake to think we're in a left-right political battle, right? We are now in a top versus bottom political battle. I am being screwed over by the people on top of me. And if the PM's not in my corner, I stop listening. You know, that I see that as the driver behind One Nation. That's why they're the third major party now. It's not a left-right fight. Pauline Hanson's perceived to be the person. She's at the bottom. Everyone else is at the top. That's David Pocock's model, and we get onto the gas thing in a bit. But if you're in the top-bottom fight on behalf of the voter, you're at least in the conversation. If you're still fighting the left-right thing, I think our politicians fear that they're being left behind.
Yeah, I think that's a good framing, and that's why, and we'll get to that as well, but why we've seen very smart, savvy politicians read the political zeitgeist. People like Andrew Hastie, Garth Hamilton, who was on Afternoon Briefing yesterday. These are sort of almost the right-leaning populists in the Liberal Party who are taking a strong line on Donald Trump, on criticising the government, absolutely, but not being gratuitous when, you know, the biggest elephant in the room is Trump's contribution to all of this. So they know that Australians are like, yeah, irritated and want the government to do more always, but they know that our Prime Minister is not Trump. They know Trump's running the world show right now and that he's running it badly. Anyway, we'll go to that in a moment because I want to talk to you about an ABC article that Claire Armstrong and Isabel Rowe detailed preliminary analysis from PM&C on fuel rationing. Now, the backstory here is Jacob and I yesterday were talking about the four stages. We're in stage two of basically the fuel emergency we're in. By the time you get to stage four, which hopefully we never get to, doesn't mean we have to get there, but if we were to get to stage four, it's the rationing stage. What wasn't clear yesterday was when the trigger to get to stage four, the rationing bit, would happen. Like, what's the supply? What does it have to look like? I asked Madeleine King, who I had on yesterday, what's that trigger? She said we decided with all the, you know, stakeholders. But today we find out it's about 10 days of diesel fuel left. You asked the Prime Minister that. How did he handle it?
Well, he didn't want to answer the question. He dismissed it as speculation. He does. In fact, I asked him, I think I said to him, so you haven't decided yet what the trigger is for rationing. Is that fair to say? He's like, no. The plan is we don't want to move off stage two. They don't want to get beyond step two. I think this goes to, so if we move away a bit from, you know, into the day-to-day political considerations, do they look like they're responsible adults? Does it look like they're in the corner of people just sort of trying to get by every day? People would love to know when rationing comes in. I think they're very conscious if they tell people, this is the indicator, this is the number of how much fuel we've got left. Once they even talk about rationing, that just spurs on even more panic buying. So and I think people who were listening to my interview with the PM, the audience was very split because I kept on pushing the PM for a trigger. And I was like, I'm not going to give you the trigger. I don't want to talk about the trigger. So there's some sensible day-to-day messaging in not giving a trigger. He didn't really want to address the detail of our colleagues' story. What I found really interesting about what the government's saying, so by saying we've got more supply than normal, by not talking about when rationing is coming, I got one text from a really interesting government MP, I'll leave it at that description yesterday, and they were saying to me, this is just getting ahead of things, building credibility with the public in case harder things are required in the future. And I'm sure, PK, when you speak to anybody in Canberra, politician or security services types, everyone, Jacob was alluding to this yesterday, it's almost certainly going to get worse, right? I had one cabinet minister.
Well, it has to get worse.
Yeah. So when one cabinet minister was texting me that. So they're trying to, I guess, just build some credibility before it gets worse. And one thing I asked the PM was, is this the carrot before the stick? You know, do you give us a fuel cut before you start rationing the fuel? He didn't want to get into that. I think a lot of people fear that there need to be lots of carrots in the system. So if they do need to start introducing lots of sticks, I find that a little bit ominous, but it also sounds really sensible, right? Mm. And the PM and the Treasurer keep saying every day, if there's peace talks tomorrow in Geneva, the fuel problem and the inflation problem is not going away, is it? It'll last for months. And we all know it's getting worse. The news this morning, there's that tanker in Kuwait.
Yes.
It's been hit. They're warning about an oil spill. I looked up the distance. Kuwait to Iran's coast, about 150 Ks.
That's nothing.
That's like Melbourne to Apollo Bay,
as the crow flies.
Especially in an Australian context.
Yeah,
like it's not far in terms of sending drones and all those sorts of things. And that's something that happened after Donald Trump threatened to blow up all of Iran's power supplies. So the talk is not great. So in the midst of all of that going on, I think they're doing a decent job. PK, do you think the government feels their messages are landing?
I think they think they're on the right track now. So they conceded that they weren't on the right track early on and that they weren't getting the message right. I thought there was a really obvious and key pivot, which I talked about yesterday. It was very clear. Also, people confirmed it to me, but you could just see it. You didn't even need a confirmation. It was obvious from the behaviour, the daily press conferences, the announcements started flowing. They were stopped kind of even pretending to, you know, not consider things. Even the fuel excise, so the coalition going on about, oh, we came up with this fuel cutting idea last week. Well, firstly, no one, come on, that's not an original idea. It's the most obvious retail, you know, Howard's done it. Obviously, Scott Morrison's done it. Labor kind of had to put the excise back on when they were elected and that was no fun. You know, no one wants to be responsible for a petrol price increase, which is what you have to do when you put the full tax back on, right? So I think now they think they're on the right track, and I think they largely are. Now, I think their biggest issue has always been, and a very senior Labor person said to me, you know, the PM's doing all the right things, but sometimes some people believe, in the Labor Party even, that sometimes his delivery and the way he kind of stands up and deals with these emergencies lacks sort of gravitas or tone. That's what they've told me. But if you look at the measures, well, has he missed? Okay, he's giving you as much as he can, cheaper petrol, given we've got a petrol problem. He's spending any amount of money possible, potentially, to get any fuel into the country he can. I mean, like, what else is there to do? He's read the room on the Australian public sentiment, which is please do not lock us down and sort of be restrictive. So he is fighting hard against anything which is authoritarian or sort of draconian in its nature.
Don't say the words COVID, Patricia. I
used them yesterday and I'm still triggered by the experience. So, like, you know, he's doing all of the right things. I don't know what he's meant to do beyond that. Like, you know, and the other thing is, which I thought was very key, was to start talking a little tougher about the US. Now, that started too. I still think they're playing it very carefully on that. And they've definitely gone there, but it's not sort of signed, sealed and delivered. It's not a denouncement. And I'd like to get your thoughts before we talk about some other taxes in the mix today. On Angus Taylor's response on this. So Andrew Hastie, we know, has been like the sort of at the sort of forefront of raising concerns about Donald Trump's war. And he has such authority as a former SAS soldier to do it, such authenticity because he's been on the ground. Like the rest of us are sort of weak losers, right? Like, sorry, but like I've never fought in a war. So I think if, you know, I really trust that he might know what it looks like. So he's able to do that. Angus Taylor, when asked about it, firstly, he just goes on about we need to open up the Strait of Hormuz. He can't pronounce it. He needs to fix that. That's driving me nuts. Is it driving you nuts? It's Hormuz, not hummus or something. Like, he needs to fix that. No, but that's true. Am I right? You're laughing because I'm right. He needs to pronounce it right. This is a serious issue.
It is a serious issue only because it's a smaller example of a much wider image problem. Andrew Hastie looks and sounds better. He uses language that cuts through. He speaks the way people in the street speak. I could make a cheap jibe that News Corporation are always supporting the next leader in an opposition. They're already writing about Andrew Hastie taking over from Angus Taylor. Hastie's just got cut through. You could argue, actually, that Anthony Albanese is able to say a few more things about, well, where's the clarity on the strategy, which is effectively what he said at his press conference yesterday and expanded on 7:30 on Monday night. He can say that, he can do that, because Andrew Hastie's been much rougher and much tougher with Donald Trump on national TV. So he does, he's providing cover, he's provide for the Prime Minister, he is providing cut through on issues. Like, where is Angus Taylor? One of the weird things in his press conference today is he kept on saying, we will continue to lead. He said that like a few times, and I just find that, I find that odd. You can sort of try to claim credit for the fuel excise idea, but the hardest thing about being in opposition is you're not leading anything. So when you keep on saying we will continue to lead, I think there's a real risk that sounds hollow. I was actually talking to people in his shadow cabinet last night about, you know, you guys can claim a bit of the credit. Sure, they can. I think they quite like the process. I think Angus Taylor's good on collaboration, on including his colleagues. I don't know that he inspires or gives real, you know, there's just, they don't feel like they are on firm ground with him.
Mm. I do think, though, that on the Trump war thing, he's been very reluctant to criticise Trump at all. And the failure to do that or to raise questions, I don't think lands well, because blind Freddie can tell you that, you know, what's going on here is amiss.
Well, it's a war of choice, right? It's a war of choice by Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. And the polls back that view, don't they? Like, the polls in Australia show something like 3/4 of people don't agree with the war. Why do you think Angus Taylor is not willing to go there?
I think because the sort of all the way with the USA view is absolutely embedded in his thinking and doesn't want to be on the record as a critic of Trump. But equally, I don't think he's, I think he's actually a really smart man. I know that, you know, someone like Malcolm Turnbull asks questions about whether he really is. I do think he's smart. And I think he's also aware that, you know, he's being probably outplayed by Hastie, because he has the luxury and also the courage, I suppose, to be fair, of criticising Trump and also reflecting, I mean, what a politician's meant to do, reflecting the public mood. And I think Hastie does do that.
But can I mean, I feel old when I ask you these questions, PK.
Old guy question. Go.
If Andrew Hastie had done that interview in any other era of Australian politics, the press gallery would be in meltdown about him challenging Angus Taylor's leadership and authority. We just seem to be at a particular point now. I don't know if it's the social media age. I don't know if it's the dire polling for the Liberal Party or Angus Taylor's a new leader. But to contradict him on Donald Trump, for Andrew Hastie to contradict Angus Taylor on that, and for Andrew Hastie to contradict Angus Taylor on the gas tax, which I'm sure we'll get onto.
About to, yeah.
We would all be in meltdown. I mean, this podcast would be dominated with the fact that what are the Liberal Party going to do? And I hate to sort of take things back to my analysis, but it goes back to, it's not a left-right thing. It's not a leadership thing. Bagging Donald Trump is about the people at the bottom getting angry with the people at the top. They've started a war. I'm paying more for petrol.
Yep.
I don't like war. Get in on that vibe that's the bottom versus the top. And again, the left-right debate just seems like that seems confined to the inside pages of the paper.
What you're saying about the interview and the way it's interpreted, this is all absolutely true. We're in a new paradigm. It's all changed. It's so changed, right? So you are right, but that's the new normal. Also, you used to get sacked if you win and you're a front bencher, not just leadership. You would be sacked if you broke ranks on key issues. And Andrew Hastie has broken ranks on key issues around tax, which this new regime wants to make their signature issue. They want to run a crude, you can see it, campaign, which is any change that happens in the budget, which is tax related, is just a tax grab. Well,
what did Angus Taylor say? Any tax on anything means you get less of it. So tax on housing, get less of it. Tax on gas, you get less of it. And I think he said something along the lines of, that's always been the Liberal Party's view. And he said that the day after Andrew Hastie being open to all of those ideas. It's kind of like, you know, like I said, it's below the fold.
Mm. Let's talk about that other issue. Labor supported a parliamentary inquiry into the tax regime for oil and gas companies. Backed a Greens motion in the Senate to establish a select committee to examine the tax settings for Australia's oil and gas resources. Now, that's a big deal because it's always look at the committees and the way that the parliamentary theatre and processes work as hints towards what governments may be open to. Doesn't mean they're all signed, sealed and delivered on this, but they are clearly showing an interest. The report comes back just before the May budget, so they would have had to sort of make decisions on it anyway, but it helps certainly. I can almost tell you for sure that it'll call for... more tax. I'm sorry, I'm just going to call it for what it is. It's going to call for a windfall tax of some sort. I just am so certain of it. But it does lay the groundwork, doesn't it, for Labor to deliver these changes. Now, there are two schools of thought in Labor at the moment, and so I don't know, you know, who will win, because the battles are on about whether this is the right time to do that or whether this is absolutely the wrong time to do it because things are so unstable. I'm not sure which argument will win, but it's all on, isn't it, Raf?
I think it's all on. And in fact, actually, the idea of jacking up what is effectively a super profits tax, I think it's called the Petroleum Resource Rent Tax, the PRRT. I think you can see clues for what they'll do, even in the discussion yesterday. You mentioned it in yesterday's pod. The states receive more money when the fuel price goes up because the GST is a percentage of the inflated fuel price. So if you inflate the fuel price, you inflate the GST take for the states. The states are going to have to hand that back. They're going to work on a mechanism for that. Maybe we'll hear about that later on today. We're recording this in the middle of the day on Tuesday. I think that is a lead indicator for what will happen with the gas super profits tax. I call it a super profits tax. David Pocock's now famous exchange in the Senate, this idea that the government reaps more tax from beer than it reaps from gas. Now, the gas industry don't like that. They ran full-page ads. I don't know if anybody saw them outside of people who read dead tree newspapers, people, old-fashioned people like me. But they are furious about that. And to tie everything back to the third major force in Australian politics, there was a Redbridge poll. One Nation voters are more angry about this than Greens voters. Like, this is something that gets people's attention. The idea that you get taxed more on your beer than you do on the super profits of the gas companies, that Redbridge poll has One Nation voters by far the most likely to be upset by that. And they are also the people who, by far beyond Greens voters, are willing to apply a tax on gas exports. These are the people that Angus Taylor needs to pull back into the tent. Again, that is great cover for Anthony Albanese to say, look, we love the gas industry. Gas is a part of the mix. Need gas is a part of the firming plan for renewables. But if you guys are making record profits, and keep in mind, a fifth of the world's gas goes through the Strait of Hormuz. So there's going to be a lot less gas for a lot longer time. The gas field in Qatar got hit. Apparently that's a 5-year delay before it is fully back up and running. So gas is going to be worth more. Absolutely. I mean, it's as plain as the nose on your face, you'd think, that there's going to be a super profits tax on gas in the May budget. And the PM will face, what, zero political pain for something that, what, basically destabilised Kevin Rudd's Prime Ministership 15 years ago?
I wouldn't go as far. I'm going to disagree with you on zero political pain. I think he'll actually still get...
What? Where from?
I just think don't underestimate the power of that...
The gas lobby.
Of big gas, big oil, and the resources they will put in to fighting for their resources. Do you know what I mean? That what they see as their resources and their profits. I'm not saying it'll win. I absolutely agree with you that we're at a different stage in history
and
times.
And it helps to have broad support across the parliament, right? You've got Greens, people inside Labor, crossbenchers like David Pocock, One Nation, Liberals like Andrew Hastie. Like, that's a good defensive shield.
It's a great defensive shield, but... let's see how they knock Andrew Hastie into shape. And I'm putting that, what they think is shape. It's not my view. There was a little bit of a slap down, it seems, by Angus Taylor. He has tried to assert, it seems to me, some authority. They have had a conversation. The way that they're reporting it is different. Depends how who you want to believe. I think Andrew Hastie said the relationship is stronger than ever. It was just a chat between mates. Look, I'm sure it was. I think Angus Taylor, from my analysis, from talking to people, look, is very careful about how he manages Andrew Hastie because he knows he's his main rival. He knows that's why he's given him some nice jobs, including deputy leader in the House. So he's trying to keep him close, but also trying to draw some red lines when he thinks he's really pushed it too far, although I think he has a lot more freedom than any other frontbencher I can see to push things pretty far. The problem, of course, for Angus Taylor is that this leadership rival for him has now marked himself across the political spectrum as a leader in poised and waiting. And all, you know, there was a view for a while he was too out there and kooky, and now everyone's like, actually, he speaks common sense, you know. And as soon as you are being talked about like that, that is not good for the incumbent, Angus Taylor. Have I got that right? Like, that's my read.
I think you are 100% right. I remember in the early days of Susan Lee's leadership, people inside the Liberal Party, Liberal MPs were saying to me, next time there's a Liberal Prime Minister, it will be Andrew Hastie. I think that faction is just growing and growing. Sure, he didn't challenge when Angus Taylor challenged because obviously the numbers weren't there. I think that's really clear. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Hastie was very polite. I caught a little bit of a Sky interview this morning. Andrew Hastie was entirely respectful, very polite when he was describing that conversation with Angus Taylor. But he's got a few newspapers boosting him. But I think that comes from real support inside the Liberal Party. They're desperate for relevance. Just keep on thinking. Last year, we weren't talking about the three major parties in politics. Now we are. And one of those major parties is One Nation. The Liberal Party lack cut through. They lack cut through. Andrew Hastie has cut through. You can praise Angus Taylor uphill and down dale for process and intelligence and credibility, whatever. Andrew Hastie is the one with cut through, and Angus Taylor knows it.
Now, one attempt at cut through, I'm not sure how it will work in punterland, voterland, but an attempt was Angus Taylor, flanked with the Nationals leader, Matt Canavan, doing a press conference where they opened up with something I thought was unusual, but then I knew exactly what they were doing, but also it was unusual, which was demanding that the Prime Minister rule out increasing the size of the Parliament. Now, what they were doing here was so kind of distinctively an attempt at populism, which was this government are fat cats that want to give you more politicians. It was trying to seize this anti-establishment, drain the swamp. Too many politicians are getting in your business, anti-authoritarian, anti-government sentiment, which does exist, absolutely, and trying to put some figures. I think they got some figures from the Parliamentary Budget Office about how much it would cost to increase the size of the Parliament. Now, the backstory here is the Special Minister of State and Trade Minister, who's a pretty powerful figure in the ALP, you know, makes and breaks careers, this guy, that's Don Farrell. Has been behind this push to increase the size of Parliament. Potentially, it hasn't been finally cooked or announced, but the idea being population's higher, you want more politicians to represent, to be accessible to their constituents, because of course, as the country grows and you've got the same number of politicians, they've got to represent more people. You know, that's harder. That's the argument. I'm not backing it. I'm just telling you what the argument is. Thought it was interesting, though, that they use this because they were trying to paint a picture. You know what they were doing, Raph, which is Labor is obsessed with themselves, building government, you know, top heavy. We're against that. So they were actually, which I found funny, arguing against themselves. And that is my favourite thing. Can I say, hands down, my favourite political thing is when politicians make you anti-politicians when they're the politicians.
Well, it works for some.
Have you looked in the mirror? You are the actual politician. Anyway, they're against the idea. I do think it's going to be hard for the government to push this idea, can I say, because of that real anti-government sentiment. Wouldn't be surprised if the PM goes, nah, not worth it.
I think you're probably right. Why would you take it on? I do think, though, it's an odd day to raise it. It's not like there isn't enough going on. I do think there is one lesson to be learnt from Anthony Albanese in opposition in the middle of a COVID crisis. Sometimes he just let the government stuff up on their own. He occasionally tried to fan the flames. He wasn't so good at fanning the flames. And you and I, as Victorians, we've watched Liberal oppositions in state politics really try to attack the government. When if people are pissed off with the government, let them be pissed off. Let them be angry.
And oh, maybe, let it rip, baby.
Let it rip. And also maybe claim the win. Okay, you might not get much credit for being the first to suggest the fuel excise cut. And you're right, it's not the world's most original idea, but just claim the win. Most people don't understand even what they are talking about, I imagine. I personally think our electorates are too big. We have some of the biggest electorates in the world. If you watch Prime Minister's questions in the House of Commons in England, you'll see hundreds and hundreds, I think it's like 600 or 700 MPs crammed into the House of Commons.
Funny you say that, because I always look at it and think there are too many.
Well, but you look, there's an argument you can make, and I'm quite partial to it, that the fewer people an MP has to look after, the more accountable the democracy is. But it's conversation for another day. I kind of get it. I actually thought, you know, Matt Canavan's, love him or hate him, he's a good populist. I'm going to really project. I don't think he had his heart in it today. Felt to me like an Angus Taylor idea. I get where they're coming from, but it's not like there isn't a bit going on. There's so much going on. There's so much news. Mm-hmm. There's an Easter holiday coming up. Mm-hmm. People are thinking, oh, hold on, should I fill up today? No, don't fill up today because the tax cut might be coming tomorrow on fuel. I just think it was an odd day to do it. Maybe they would say, oh, you know, you'd criticise us for not trying to be a bit populist. I just thought it was a bit of an odd fight to pick. This is really hard for Anthony Albanese. His ministers know really tough stuff is coming down the pike. Just get out of the way. Get out of the way. I would have spent all question time saying, why did you steal my idea if I was Angus Taylor?
Yeah, and just, I would too.
And let the PM talk.
I thought it was a weird thing to do, but that's why I explained, you know, and I think it's obvious. I'm not trying to be a smarty pants, like what was motivating it, which was trying to press the button of the anti-politician kind of.
Well, he's just trying to show his colleagues that, isn't he?
But no, look, but also the public. I think that resonates with the public as well. It's not just his colleagues. And it's a bit, you know, it's that anti-government sentiment and we're not part of this kind of bloated Labor thing. That's what he's trying to do. Yeah,
politics is about timing, isn't it, right? You don't have to come up with a brilliant idea. But you've got to say the right idea at the right time. Wrong time. Today's the wrong time.
I thought it was unusual too, I agree. Look, just a couple of other things that are worth noting. Inflation is likely to hit 5% by June, according to the RBA. So just think about that. Okay, I don't want to freak you out, but that's very unpleasant.
That's the ultimate tax, inflation.
Yep. There is a very significant decision, which we have no time to get into, but just want to note it. The Fair Work decision to scrap junior rates for young adults is a really big deal. And of course, it's been welcomed. You won't be surprised by the Labor government, but I think that is a big deal. I think that's been one of those bubbling issues that has always seemed, and you know, I'm sort of offering a view here, a little at odds with sort of basic human rights when you're doing the Labor.
Well, so there's two ways to look at it, right? My kids have just passed the 21 threshold. They were furious that as 18 and 19 year olds, they weren't earning as much money as the 21 and 22 year old. So that decision changes. If you're that age, it makes perfect sense. Why should the 18-year-old not get paid as much? It doesn't affect the sort of the teenage, you know, the 15, 16-year-olds will still get paid less. But if you're running the business and you're thinking about fuel and diesel and inflation and you've got another little wages bill for those younger workers, like that is an issue that you have to confront if you're the one paying the bills. So it's one of those, it may well be one of those little sleeper issues of building resentment and anger, just another cost if I'm running a business.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. I actually do. And you know, if you are running a business at the moment, you are absolutely, just like households are, just to be clear, but you are being smashed. And so you are right, timing again, your timing point, but timing on this, you know, timing is everything and timing will be not well received by all, that's for sure. Well, that's it for politics now for today. I'm going to be joined by Claire Armstrong tomorrow with the latest developments. I'm in Parliament House. Tomorrow is actually the last sitting day. It finishes earlier because of the Easter break. And then if you've got a question for us, Fran and I will be answering those questions in a special edition of The Party Room. Send your questions to thepartyroom@abc.net.au and we'll attempt very, 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 actually, we'll put a lot of effort into trying to answer them. See you, Raph.
See you later, PK.